This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio, the episode that almost didn't happen. This morning we lost all internet and telephone service at the studio, hence we did not have a first hour. We are starting the second hour early as we perform the Subversity Science Roundup for many of you who have missed it. I saw when we posted it on Facebook, some people said that they were getting worried that it wasn't going to happen, but it is here, it is now, and the brilliant and talented Adele Musa is joining us all the way from Munster, Germany. How you doing, Adele?
I'm actually doing fine today, but it was pretty amusing for me when I tuned in the radio and wanted to listen to the first hour of the show and realized that there was no show, and I didn't read your email before and was shocked, to say the least, just like the listeners probably who read your message on Facebook.
And you know what happened? I couldn't even post anything on Facebook because I had no internet. Well, that's not true. I could have posted something, I guess, from my iPhone, but my iPhone doesn't work. Interestingly enough, I don't know if anybody else is straddled with this challenge, but my phone does not work at the two most important places that I need it to work, and that is at the studio and at my home. I have to always go outside of my home to get my phone to work, and I have to run outside the building to get my phone to work from inside the studio. So it's just very, you know, technology is frustrating. It really, really is. So that's all I
can say. It's so radiation-free that it does not radiate through the big walls of the studio.
Yeah, exactly. And because I'm down in the depths. There's no windows down here. You know, I needed a very silent area, so I'm down in the depths of the building. So anyway. Okay, so we are going to perform the Subversity Science Roundup to research in the news, and Adele has selected a bunch of really, really good studies. What do you want to start with, Adele?
Well, actually, I would like to start with the latest discoveries about why meat does make us sick, or why it does now finally make us sick, and all the previous research is false, or we can forget about it.
Okay. I mean, this is going on forever and ever, this discussion, right?
Yeah, it is. And there's always something new scientists find that is then really blown up by the media. And all of a sudden, everyone thinks, well, they've been right all along, those people claiming that eating red meat especially is going to give you all the ailments of the Western society or that are plaguing the Western society. And I think there is a tendency to really wait for news like that on one half of the audience of all sorts of media, and the other half is jumping at it and trying to refute claims or any claim that meat was bad for you. And actually, I've written about the article yesterday on the Subversity, and in the course of writing, I realized that one of the most interesting aspects is why those news actually make it to the mainstream media, and why other news are always ignored.
Like news about soy, for instance.
For instance, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I came up with a couple of points, and one that I actually did not mention in the article is the way that the scientists aptly edit the line "a nutrient in meat" to the original title, which I suspect was just intestinal microbiota metabolism of L-carnitine promotes atherosclerosis. And they added in "a nutrient in red meat" to expand on the L-carnitine, and all of a sudden a study which would otherwise have been has gone as unnoticed as previous studies which showed exactly the same results became a huge media hype.
And so what was the reality of it?
Well, in the end, we already knew that there's certain metabolites that does not only arise when bacteria digest and poop out L-carnitine, but also other choline-based nutrients. And this particular metabolite will then be transferred to the liver, where it is metabolized to another
molecule,
so to say, toxic substance.
Okay.
Of which the scientists have observed in rodent studies, and in this particular study, they used a rodent model which is particularly prone to develop atherosclerosis. In fact, even if you treat them well, they will usually get this disease. They observed that it accelerated the process, and the lesions of the arteries became even worse. So, in essence, there's nothing really new to this study, aside from the fact that all of a sudden it got real media attention.
So what? Okay, I want to be clear about something. Does carnitine produce this this byproduct that ends up becoming toxified as it's metabolized by the liver?
Well, funnily, it's a combination of the bacteria in the gut and carnitine. So if you don't have an overabundance of the so-called bad bacteria, you will not produce as much of the precursor, which is then metabolized into the toxic substance. So the interesting thing is that from previous studies, we also know that eating these types of foods, or a diet which is particularly rich in meats and other foods with a high choline content, precipitates the growth of this type of bacteria.
Mm.
So in a realistic scenario where you would eat also other foods, and especially foods which promote the opposite side of the bacterial community, so to say, you would not really have to worry about these effects. And even if you didn't, the rodent studies we do have up to now don't really conclusively show that there will be problems in humans. First of all, this was the special rodent model which is already precipitated to develop atherosclerosis. And second of all, we know from previous studies that especially choline is actually associated with increased heart health, because it helps with the clearance of homocysteine. And we also have studies showing that L-carnitine is good for heart health. So why do we give up on all of that and suddenly cry out that this is bad for us just because it's in red meat?
See, I would have chosen to call this study people with compromised gut bacteria more susceptible to developing heart disease as a result of standard diet. This is what baffles me. You know, if you have a problem in this country, at least the United States, if a minority has a problem, we want to skew it so that the majority has to compensate for it. And this is a perfect example of the way science looks at this. So red meat is being bashed because some people have compromised gut bacteria that makes it unhealthy for them to eat red meat. So we're all being told that red meat. Now, Adele, does any of this matter if we are looking at grass-fed, grass-finished beef, or is this because it's a amino acid / choline relationship? All meat falls into this category. All red meat.
I don't think that the type of meat will matter directly.
Right.
But we have evidence from other studies that omega-3 fatty acids also have a beneficial effect on the makeup of the gut microbiome. So this could be another factor which really counters the possible negative effects. And we all know that omega-3 fatty acids are a good or a beneficial omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acid ratio is one of the real proven determinants of reduced heart reduced risk of cardiovascular disease. So it would in the end, of course, make a difference, but not with respect to this particular mechanism. And maybe it's also interesting to see or to say that we don't really know if there is not another sex group. For example, the scientists also observed that there was a decrease in bile acids, which in turn would decrease the absorption of cholesterol.
Right.
And maybe there are other confounding factors involved here as well. So as of now, it appears as if we had suddenly discovered why red meat is bad for us. And in fact, we only have another hypothesis, which has been shown in other studies, to explain a maximum of 11%, even if the rodents were directly fed with this toxic substance, of the increase in heart disease risk. So it is clear that this is only a piece to the puzzle, and still we are made to believe that it is that it gives the whole explanation.
You know why the media loves to run these types of stories about red meat? Because so many people eat red meat. So look, if you run a story that says, I don't know, pick some obscure thing that people do. You know, people with left-handed screwdrivers are susceptible to blah, blah, blah. No one's going to tune into that story because it's such a small portion of the population that subscribe to the left-handed screwdriver. But when you say red meat kills you, the entire nation takes note because everybody eats red meat. So they love this sort of stuff. They just love it. It's not about getting the word out. It's about getting eyes and ears to tune in. It's very sad. It's very, very sad. It really, really is.
And and interestingly, this was also one of the points I mentioned. And another one which really pertains or which really tables to this one is that with a study like this, you always have the sentence, a study that was published in the prestigious scientific journal Nature, and then it goes on. And I don't know, but my personal feeling is that the editors of Nature really know what type of stuff people want to read. Yeah. Because if I go through the different issues, you always find these studies, and oftentimes you find this intriguing ways of making something that is not really that interesting to the public interesting by adding in this extra information, which is obviously right, but would not really be there if this was a study that was just written for a scientific audience.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. We're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, we've got a story that we're going to talk about. We're going to focus on the women who don't want to become bulky ladies. We have some good research that we'll be talking about. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. It's brought to you by Subversity.com. The amount of information that Adele Moussa puts out on Subversity is just crazy. If you had to pay for this in a magazine, you'd pay hundreds of dollars a month to get this stuff. Just go to Subversity.com today and learn for yourself what everybody else is raving about. We'll be right back with more Subversity Science Roundup.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com. nutrition.com today.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more. Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Before we move on to what I thought we were going to talk about, let's talk more about protein. Everybody, well, actually, no one gets enough information about protein, right?
No, of course not, and especially people who read those articles about how bad red meat is for you, they won't get the right information about protein, to say the least. And interestingly enough, it also ties in quite well with the next topic, because you already mentioned that we would be talking about women and training for strength. And another group of people who are really, or who should really be concerned about their physical activity and their strength, are actually older people. And the Tufts University has conducted a study recently in which they evaluated data from over 2,000 or roughly 2,500 participants. And what they found was that there is a clear-cut correlation between the lean body mass of the person and his or her usual protein intake. And what's quite funny in terms of what we've been talking about before is that one of the most characteristic determinants actually is the amount of beef the people eat.
Right.
And beef is exactly the type of red meat which has the highest carnitine content, or among the highest carnitine content, and which was particularly criticized in this article and in many other articles, because it's also said that beef is one of the least sustainable meats, as its production would cost thousands of tons of good grains we could eat ourselves.
Yeah, good grains, right. No, don't feed them grains. Feed them grass. How about that one?
that would be even more unsustainable because the grass would need even larger larger areas. We would rather have one to plaster with streets and airways and stuff like that.
Right.
But back to the actual study, it's really quite interesting to see that depending on the protein intake, and then I was actually really shocked to see the numbers, because some of those people hardly managed to get in roughly 60 grams of protein per day, and you really could see that in their skeletal muscle mass index, which is the amount of muscle mass divided by the body size. So it's muscle mass divided by height in centimeters. And there was a difference between people who consumed just 60 grams and people who got at least 90 grams of protein, and this is total protein per day, which are still
very low by most of our standards.
Yeah. And the difference was between 7.5 and 8.5. So this was one point on this index, and this does really make a significant difference also in terms of the mobility the people have had at the time they participated in the study, and especially the mobility they may even have later in life. Because remember, this were not only elderly people, but also people in their middle ages. So if you are under muscle, so to say, with 50 already, you will pretty certainly get problems when you're getting older.
And this is a big problem. Most elderly adults don't eat enough protein. For some reason, and I don't know if it's because it becomes harder and harder for them to digest more complex proteins, and they should just turn to some sort of protein supplement, whether it be egg white protein or whey protein or whatever. But the older adults who need the protein the most tend to get the least.
Yeah.
So
it's unfortunate, and it's a real problem, because it is still overlooked, and many of them, or maybe it's not at least the really old generation, for them it is it's not prudent to have meat every day. I recall my grandmother telling me this over and over again, that it cannot be healthy because you just don't eat meat every day.
But people eat bread every day.
Yeah, of course. But back in the days, you couldn't have meat every day because you couldn't afford it.
That's the real issue.
So used to this. That I think this is how it has to be. You eat meat once a week or twice a week. And so some of them don't really have the palate, but they don't really like to eat that much meat. Others maybe have digestive problems, as you mentioned. And there are others, again, who simply eat very little and then only pick what they really like. And unfortunately, this is usually stuff like cookies and other sweets, because elderly people also they still are able to taste sweet stuff pretty well, but these nuances of regular foods they are lost because their sense of taste is not that accurate
anymore. I'll never forget when I was in college, I had a physics teacher named Dr. Schneer, and I remember I had to go to his office one day. And he had to be close to retirement age. He had to be in his 60s, but he didn't. He looked older. He looked like he was in his 70s. He was a very, very thin, tall man, always wore the same type of clothes, slacks, white shirt unbuttoned, and a jacket. And I went to his office, and he was sitting there with a tall glass of milk and a bag of Oreo cookies while we talked. And he must have eaten a dozen Oreo cookies. And back then, I was in my early 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. And I didn't think about it then. But now, every now and then I think about him, I think, my God, he was eating the worst thing you can eat at that age. And that's what, and most elderly people gravitate towards those types of things.
Yeah, because this is what they will taste. And therefore they like it. And was your teacher, did he happen to be obese as well, or overweight at least?
No, he was not. He was very thin. He was very thin. But okay. You know what? He was, I predict that he was a very conservative man. And so perhaps he ate those cookies and maybe had one other meal that day. I don't think he ate a lot. But what he ate were really bad choices, I have a feeling, you know? In retrospect.
The reason I was asking is because another interesting finding of the study is that among those subjects who were obese or overweight, who consumed less than 70 grams of protein per day, exercise, and particularly vigorous exercise, actually decreased or was associated with lower muscle mass than sitting around. So this means those who really have to carry much weight around when they exercise and don't consume enough protein, they end up losing muscle due to exercise or despite working out.
Right.
So when you prescribe, as a doctor, when you prescribe your patient to go and work out, you must think about whether or not he or she will be able to grasp the benefits because he or she doesn't consume enough protein in his diet.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows that I've been warning against consuming or eating only protein, but I guess that a baseline level of at least 19 grams of protein is what really everyone should be consuming.
How much protein do you eat a day, Adele?
I would guess. I try to get 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram per day. So I'm somewhere between 150 and 200 grams, and I'm only counting quote-unquote real protein. So I'm just counting what I'm getting from meats and eggs.
Yeah, not the residual protein in peanut butter or something like that, right?
No, I don't even consider that there's protein in it. I'm just counting. Usually I try to ascribe a certain category to foods. So eggs, for example, is fat and protein. And a chicken breast, for example, may also have some fat on it.
Yeah.
And I don't cut that off, but I don't even count that there's fat on it. That's just protein for me.
Since I've been using this MyFitnessPal app on my iPhone, I've been able to, and I got to tell you, I really like this app. One of the listeners told me you can go to the website and adjust your macronutrient ratio. So I made it 50-30-20, protein, carbs, fats, because that's what I like to eat. And I didn't realize how easy it is for me, just doing the things I normally do, to hit 250 grams of protein in a day. I mean, it's just been but now I'm 200. As of this morning, I stepped on the scale, and I have to tell you, I've put on a great deal of muscle in the past couple months. I'm 242 pounds as of this morning, and I estimate I'm about 19% body fat right now. And so at 242 pounds, 260 grams of protein is not excessive. Do you think it is, or do you think that that's still too much and that I'm actually causing more protein breakdown by increasing the enzymes required to digest my protein?
No, I don't think so. You're at about 2 grams per kilogram. And that's still within the limits. And also, your overall diet is not deficient in energy. The real problems are when you're just consuming, when you have a very low baseline intake of energy, and then on top of that decide that you want to have, say, 500 grams of protein alone, and you only have 200 additional calories to spend on other nutrients, then you're really running into problems. And this is actually why many people who hear that it is good to adhere to a high protein diet to lose weight, why they fail in the end, because they don't have enough macronutrients or enough, I don't hate this word, but they don't have enough calories left to be assigned to other macronutrients they really need.
Right.
Because they think they would have to eat 4 grams of protein per pound of lean body mass.
Right.
And otherwise they would lose muscle. But interestingly, the exact opposite can happen when you have too little of the real energy providing nutrients.
You know, I'm also, and I know this is completely off topic, But I'm also using what I like to call a growth cocktail right after my workout. I have a prescription for two IUs of growth hormone 5 days a week, but I'm not taking it that way. On training days post-workout, I'm combining four IUs of growth hormone with 150 micrograms of IGF-1 long R3 and 250 micrograms of GHRP6. And I'm using all three of those simultaneously before my post-workout meal. You have any thoughts on that? And I'll tell you why I'm doing it after that.
I don't know, because actually you would have physiologically elevated growth hormone levels after the workout.
Right.
On the other hand, you could argue that you want to the growth hormone to be floating around in the maximum dosage at the moment where it can
be most effective.
It does not really act. Part of its effect is mediated by the specific types of growth hormone within the muscle, MGF, for example.
Right.
But studies suggest that there is a direct relation between the growth hormone outside and inside the muscle in terms of how much of the MGF is produced. So it does make sense to do this, but I wouldn't say that I'm sure that it's the best way to do it.
The reason I'm doing it is this. I don't want to use growth hormone the morning of my workout because I know that my body is going to produce growth hormone during my workout. I don't want to impede that. I want to then take that and expand on it by adding my exogenous growth hormone that I have a prescription for. Then there's a lot of concern about IGF-1 leading to cancers, except when there is a high occurrence of binding protein 3. So my growth hormone gives me a little bit of a oncoprotective edge on my IGF-1 because in the face of growth hormone, the liver will produce more binding protein 3. And then lastly, in the normal body, growth hormone is not produced and IGF-1 downstream is not produced in the absence of some sort of growth hormone releasing hormone.
Yeah.
So by using my GHRP with it, these three growth agents occur the way they would if my body was producing the growth hormone. I would have a growth hormone releasing protein or growth hormone releasing hormone produced. The response of growth hormone would occur, and then the downstream conversion to IGF-1 would occur. So I use all three of them at the same time. That's my logic. I know it's not very smart, but I have to tell you, if one more person comes up to me in the gym and says, "My God, you've gotten so wide, your shoulders have gotten so round," I'm going to say, "This is working. This is working."
Yeah, so, I think the rationale is obviously correct, because this would be the same as people using HCG in connection with testosterone replacement, because this is also part of the regular cascade,
right,
that you would have the trigger in there. And in your case, this is not much different. And I would think that it really makes sense to take them in conjunction. Also because we, as far as I know, we don't really know what other metabolic and endocrine side effects the GHRP6 has. And I think that those side effects, which may not be directly related to the release of the hormone, but maybe even
by
just
itself.
Acting by itself.
And this is an interesting point. When I would take IGF-1 long R3 post-workout, if I didn't have my meal ready to go, I would become super hypoglycemic in about 30 minutes. I would actually start getting woozy. Well, when I started taking the growth hormone and the IGF-1 long R3 together, that mitigated that. I didn't feel that because the growth hormone was helping to modulate my blood sugar levels while the IGF-1 was trying to shuttle blood sugar into muscles. And so that's what made me think, well, I wonder if I would still feel super hungry from the GHRP if I took them all three. And sure enough, I don't have that same sense of a super hunger because they're all three hitting the body at the same time. And one is compensating because one is calling for the other to do something. So they're all three there. It's working for me. That's all I can say. It's working for me. Now, if I'm diagnosed with a tumor the size of a basketball in a year, you'll know why. But on that note,
you'll know why you have gotten so white.
Yeah.
It's growing on your back.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it. It's not my back isn't as big as a barn door. It's that I have a small Volkswagen Beetle growing out of it. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll come back. We'll cover some more research. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. Visit Subversity.com today. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
New from Rob Riggish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altrientc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The power patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the power patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, AM Nutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition. Nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
And nutrition.
Jumping higher, left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, let's get back on track. Adele, what story do you want to attack next?
I guess we continue what you already know, with the story about women and strength training.
Yeah, all women are worried about being bulky, right?
Yeah, of course. They just have to look at the weights and they are growing backs you cannot compete with.
Right.
No, just kidding. But I think this really ties in with the previous topic about being strong in the older age. And a group of scientists who have already done pretty much of work in terms of blood flow restriction, they have just published another study in which they try to elucidate the effects on bone-free lean body mass and muscle thickness in postmenopausal women. And those women were 61 years old on average, and they trained for 8 weeks, three times a week, at either a moderate or a very low intensity with those standard resistance training bands. And the training in itself was progressive, in so that the training load or the intensity always remained the same. So one group went up and took the different colors of those resistance bands, which equal different resistance, and the other group had, at least initially, just higher pressure on the cuffs until a certain threshold was achieved, and they also had to take other resistance bands. But in general, the blood pressure, the group which used additional cuffs did train at a very low intensity, and the outcome still was exactly the same. And this is interesting because we know that people, as people get older, they get all sorts of ailments, and
right,
especially those who would need the strength training most oftentimes kind of can't even strength train because they got problems with their joints or they got injuries or they got other issues going. And this type of training using the blood flow restriction as an adjunct would really, could really make a great difference. And it could also be used as a stepping stone to get back into real training for any athlete who's recovering from an injury.
In fact, when the Japanese scientist who discovered this Katsu method worked on it initially, they postulated that this could be used for recovery. And that's why the early studies were done on upper leg muscles, and the cuffs were placed up in the area of the groin, and they had an individual do very, very light leg extensions to determine whether or not there would be a hypertrophic effect, and there was. And they said this could be a great adjunct to physical therapy, where muscle wasting occurs because the leg has been immobilized in a cast. But the leg is not strong enough to do the hard work it needs to do to rebuild the muscle. This is a great way to do it.
Yeah, true. And interestingly enough, none of the women became bulky. So hardly any of the increases in size were actually statistically significant, while the increases in strength were highly significant. So in other words, the women don't have to be afraid that they get bulky when they do strength training, but they can still benefit from getting stronger and building metabolic currency, as you call it, so to say. And I think this is a very important finding of the study, because if there was an increase, the increase was only in the total mass, but in some cases, for some body parts, for example, in parts of the arm, the muscle mass increased while the circumference of the arms decreased. So they got even less bulky, so to say, by training and getting stronger.
Yeah, in other words, the coefficient between size and strength shifted towards strength and away from size. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, if you measure the size of the arms, you obviously also measure the ugly fat that's usually above the muscles. And I remember that many women claim they already had big enough legs and big enough arms and didn't want the muscle beneath to make them even bigger. And this is exactly what's not going to happen. So even if the muscle mass increases, usually the result will look much, much leaner and much better, and far from the arms of a bodybuilder, even a female bodybuilder or figure athlete. So this is really nothing you have to be worried about if you're doing a moderate strength training to really keep in shape. And this is actually where another study I wanted to mention ties in, because another group of scientists found out that on an epidemiological basis, one of the determinants of greater muscle mass is, interestingly enough, insulin resistance, at least in women. So they did a study and found that hyperinsulinemia in overweight or obese women is associated with increased extremity muscle mass, which is partially reversible with reduction of fasting insulin concentration.
Wait a minute. So insulin resistance could potentially beget bigger muscles?
Yeah, it does, yeah. And this is due to the muscle burning effect of insulin. If you have insulin floating around all the time,
you are
in an anti-catabolic state, so to say. And at least as long as you are still a little insulin resistant, so as long as it still does anything, this is actually a positive factor for muscle growth. And on the other hand, it also inhibits the regular deconstruction of muscle, because actually our body is turning over and over all the cells all the time. And this turnover stops in a way, and this is also why people who are insulin resistant or who have high insulin levels are much more prone to get cancer, because the cells won't be turned over in time before they can become cancerous.
Oh, wow. That's really
so interestingly enough, you would say you have to work out in order to become insulin sensitive to lose those huge legs you really don't want to have, because you want to look as slender as Mrs. X on the last magazine cover of Shape or whatever.
Or Oxygen magazine, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's stay with insulin sensitivity for a second and glucose management. You have a study here about green tea and vitamin E. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's also an interesting study, because this would be exactly what you would add to your mix, to your training mix. Two cups of green tea and 400 IUs of vitamin E was what the participants of this study added on top of a dietary and moderate exercise intervention. And this really improved the results, and especially the additional loss in waist circumference is pretty impressive, because one group, or the group who did not consume an additional consume the green tea and the vitamin E supplement, they lost only, quote unquote, only 5 centimeters of their waist, and the other group lost 11 centimeters. Although they did nothing else than drinking their 3 cups of green tea per day and having 400 IUs of regular vitamin E.
Wow.
And it should be mentioned that the participants in this study were elderly men and women aged 70.
Wow.
So for them, it's really important to keep the inflammation as low as possible, because we know that in elderly individuals, the problem is not so much that the protein synthesis, for example, in terms of muscle building, doesn't work as good as in young ones. It is attenuated. But the real problem is that the catabolic enzymes in the muscle are overexpressed compared to younger ones. And part of this overexpression is related to the inability to control the inflammation in a beneficial way. And I guess that therefore, not only in a diet context, but also in terms of being fit, staying fit, and maintaining muscle mass, elderly individuals will generally benefit more, or even more, from consuming green tea, supplementing with reasonable amounts of vitamin E. 400 IUs, I think, is about as much as I would suggest to take on a daily basis.
And I would take CoQ10 too, because they are reciprocal in nature.
They are, yeah. And it would also make sense to have, instead of a regular vitamin E supplement, maybe a supplement also containing tocotrienol.
Yes.
And I've just yesterday, I think, posted on the Subversity Facebook wall a study showing that one of the more popular currently available vitamin E supplements containing both alpha tocopherol and tocotrienols actually helps maintaining bone mass or even build bone mass in a rodent study. So we all know that in the age of 70, bone mass or maintaining your bone mass is another issue, and therefore this would be the preferable form, I think.
Well, let me ask you a question. I want to stay with vitamin E just for a second, and then we can go on to about vitamin C and artificial sweetener in green tea. I take a whole vitamin E supplement. It has all four tocopherols and all four tocotrienols in their naturally occurring ratios. I think it comes from a palm fruit oil or something like that. And so I have been taking several capsules a day because I am using the gamma tocopherol 400 IU target as the goal, with all the other ratios falling into place. Is that a mistake, or should I take 400 IUs of complete in total, tocotrienols and tocopherols, or should I take 400 IUs of the gamma tocopherol as the target and let the other ratios find their way?
I think this is a question we don't really have the answer as of now. But you should be aware of the fact that despite this may not be as pronounced if you consume a mixed vitamin E's, that vitamin E is actually, it's used, so to say, and once it's used, it becomes toxic. So if you over-supplement with vitamin E, you can run into problems because the used vitamin E will be floating around and cannot be recycled in time. And actually, this is one of the few arguments where I see that one of the really most promising antioxidants is actually alpha-lipoic acid, because alpha-lipoic acid is an antioxidant which is in and of itself an antioxidant, but it also helps in this process of quote-unquote recycling used other antioxidants, also and especially vitamin E. And to come back to your question, I personally would at least try to stay below the 800 IU range for all types of vitamin E per day, because there are studies which suggest that going above this limit, of course, only these were only alpha tocopherol studies, but above this limit, you can really run or you can really have more problems or produce more problems than solve them.
Okay. That's good advice. Before we go into the break, can we just touch on how vitamin C and one of the sugar alcohols may actually enhance green tea's effects?
Yeah, that's interesting, because in the study we just talked about, they didn't even do that. So they didn't use xylitol, which is one of the sugar alcohols, actually one of those better known sugar alcohols, and obviously also one of those which is easier digested, because we all know that some people get real problems, digestive problems, whenever they eat or consume foods containing these sugar alcohols. So this one is one which would probably not be that problematic. And xylitol and vitamin C, so ascorbic acid, they both in and out of themselves, but also synergistically, have the ability to increase the uptake and bioavailability of the catechins in green tea, so the effective ingredients in green tea by several 10%. Depends on, up to now we do only have rodent data on this, so I can't really say how the percentages in humans would be, but it is quite obvious that the addition or the presence of vitamin C and xylitol in the stomach either hamper the breakdown, or this is the most likely mechanism, or by whatever other means help the absorption of the catechins. And if you think about it, the xylitol and other sugar alcohols, they have an effect on the gut microbiota. And they have also been shown to help, for example, people with gastric reflux. The vitamin C, on the other hand, could protect the antioxidants in green tea, so to say, from being oxidized before they are absorbed. We've been talking about the problem with fish oil in one of the last installments.
Right.
That it's actually oxidized once it's exposed to the enzymes, to the digestive enzymes in the stomach or in the intestine. And I suppose that there is a similar mechanism with the vitamin C protecting the green tea antioxidants from oxidation or from being oxidized before they are reaching their target. And thus, this will probably be the mechanism by which it works. I don't know if green tea really tastes good if you add vitamin C to it, but you don't really necessarily have to mix them before you drink it. With the xylitol, of course, you could sweeten your green tea with xylitol. I don't see a problem with that. But the vitamin C is probably better taken afterwards or before, so that they are present in your digestive tract at the same moment.
I'll tell you something. Sugar alcohols have gotten a lot of bad press over the years, mainly because of the digestive problems they cause more than anything else. But did you see that study? And again, I digress here. Have you seen the study on mannitol and Parkinson's disease and metal buildup in the melanocytes of the substantia nigra?
No, I didn't.
There's a great study out there, and I haven't really had the time to thoroughly read it through, but I've gleaned it twice already. And this is interesting, Adele. Some people use Melanotan 2 and become very nauseous from it. I'm one of those people. And other people, generally fair-skinned people, they don't become nauseous from it. And it may actually have to do with our brains containing more melanocytes. I think it's called the melanocortin network. Is that right, Adele?
Yeah.
Well, mannitol, when given to laboratory rats that are designed to develop Parkinson's disease, actually kept the rats from getting Parkinson's disease indefinitely, as long as they received the mannitol in their diet. And what they determined was that as metal apparently builds up in these melanin-containing cells of the substantia nigra, and the mannitol somehow allows the brain to rid itself of this metabolic material. If you don't feed them the mannitol, what happens is the metal particles destroy the melanocytes, and as the melanocytes disappear, the Parkinson's disease onset occurs. So mannitol, you know, has always gotten a bad rap from people who are in the health community. Oh, you know, sugar alcohols are terrible. You should. Well, one of them may prevent Parkinson's disease just by eating it.
That's interesting. There is another sugar alcohol. I'm not really remembering the name because there are so many of them, which has been shown in rodent studies to not only be better than sugar in terms of insulin or of producing insulin resistance, but actually to help reversing insulin resistance. And I think there's still much to learn about these. And I already mentioned that some of those sugar alcohols are used in chewing gum, for example, to help destroy the bad bacteria.
Yes.
In the mouth. And maybe we'll probably find that some of them also have a beneficial, some could have a negative effect on the gut microbiome. And there is already a preliminary evidence that some of them appear to be more toxic, interestingly, to bacteria of which we now believe that they are the bad guys. Although, pertaining to what I've said before, what are the bad guys now for us may just be the bad guys because we are gravitating to have too many of them.
Right.
And if we had too little of them and too many of the good guys, we could have similar or other problems.
Right.
But that's the same for every ecosystem, and our
right.
gut is an ecosystem.
Biodiversity is critical. Okay,
yeah,
let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll pick it up. This is the Subversity Science Roundup, where your brain gets bigger. Thanks to Adele Moussa. Visit his website, subversity.com. We'll be right back with more.
I'm the been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanical Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high protein, low carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts. It's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. This story is going to really interest the ladies and men who don't put a lot of stock in the value of estrogen. Okay, Adele. So when women go through menopause, they all find that they have a hard time losing body fat, right?
Yeah, they do. And actually, a recent study found one of the reasons is actually the lack of estrogen or loss of estrogen. And the in this particular study, the scientists tried to find out whether there is also a difference in terms of the amount of fatty acids and energy in general that women pre- and post-menopause are burning when they are cycling on an ergometer for 45 minutes. And at a very low intensity of 50% only of the O2 max. And the intention of picking such a low level was actually to minimize the glucose expenditure so that most of the energy would come from fatty acids while the women were pedaling away on their ergometers. And what the scientists found was actually that the postmenopausal women had a 33% lower whole body fat oxidation while they were exercising than the premenopausal women, and a 19% lower total energy expenditure. And this is interesting. So while they did burn only roughly 20% less energy, they burned 30% less fat. And although it really does not seem to be very important whether you burn fat or not while you're working out, it can really make a difference in terms of also your satiety effect and your the way or the urge of eating again when you're not able to run on fat as well. Because whenever you're fasted and you don't have the ability to really access your fat stores, you will get, or you will become hungry faster again. And therefore, it can make a difference. And we all know that it does make a difference. And you already said that women after menopause have a harder time losing body fat and even have a hard time fighting it off. And part of this is also related to a decrease in lean body mass. And this particular decrease in body mass, interestingly, could explain, was able to explain the 19% decrease in total energy expenditure, but it could not explain the huge shift from the use of fatty acids to carbohydrates. And this is actually the most intriguing message here, which is also important for the men out there. Is that very similar results have also been observed in a 2005 study where scientists did something that most of the, or at least some of the listeners probably think would be hilarious. They supplemented men, or they injected men with estrogen, and they looked at what would happen when they were working out. And interestingly enough, what they found was that the carbohydrate oxidation decreased by 16%, and the fatty acid oxidation while the men were working out increased by up to 44%. So in the end, the men ended up burning much more calories from glucose and fat. And what's really important for the guys who want to build muscle, They also burn 16% less leucine. So they used 16% less protein, because leucine was the only amino acid they measured in the study. You can safely assume that the overall shift was towards fat oxidation, and there was an additional shift, not just away from using glucose as a fuel, but also from using protein as a fuel, just due to the injection of estrogen. And this goes much against what most people think, that only testosterone would matter in terms of building muscle, because estrogen has its role, especially in terms of body composition. It's also responsible, or also important, for the effects exercise has on the mitochondria, and it also appears to figure much in the repair of muscular tissue. As far as this requires satellite cells, because whenever you administer tamoxifen, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator which blocks the estrogen receptor to rodents, they will no longer be able to maintain their satellite cell pool, and therefore won't be able to incorporate those new muscle stem cells into the musculature. And I'm well aware that there are scientists saying this is not that important, and in the short term it may in fact not really be that important if you're just looking at protein synthesis. But if you're looking at the structural changes which are necessary to grow and grow, then this will of course become important, because you must think of the muscle as a conglomerate of balloons. And each of those balloons can be inflated only to a certain degree. And when it's completely inflated, you will have myostatin inhibit further growth.
Right.
Until you add another balloon, which can be inflated again. And this adding of another balloon is the recruitment of a new satellite cell, which will then form a new myonucleus, which is the center, so to say, of one of the muscle cells. and will then allow the muscle to expand further. And if myostatin wouldn't block this, we would see in trainees the exact same effects we see in those poor rodents who are big but can't hardly move because their muscle is big but dysfunctional.
Right. You know, this speaks a lot to aromatizing androgens versus non-aromatizing androgens. Aromatizing androgens are well known to put a great deal more muscle on an individual than non-aromatizing androgens. And the beef producers learned this a long time ago when they started to incorporate, along with trenbolone acetate, estradiol benzoate. When they included estradiol with the trenbolone, the cows that they were trying to muscled up, almost fourfold faster when including estradiol. So, you know, we're all out there about suppressing estrogen, but it's not necessarily as effective as a lot of people think in a vacuum, so to speak. You need to look at the push and the pull of what estrogen really does. What would you suggest to menopausal women, Adele?
Well, I personally would really consider estrogen replacement, natural estrogen replacement, of course. And on the other hand, this may not even be really necessary. You just have to be aware that that things won't be working as they were working before. I think if you are really sticking to a diet that is appropriate for you at this time point, and not the diet that may have been appropriate for you before. And if you are not cutting back on the volume or the frequency, especially of your workouts, I think that you can maintain a very decent physique even after menopause. Although the ideal of looking like a 20-year-old when you're 70 is something I would not recommend to have in mind, because you will never achieve that. And I don't think that it's a shame to age and to be visibly older, so to say. You just have to be careful not to get to fall into these into the obesity trap which lurks when you lose lean muscle mass and give up on your physical activity.
Yeah. Let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to select a few stories to wrap up with, because I'm unable to go too long today. This is the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa. If you've never visited subversity.com, you're really missing out. Some of the most brilliant topics are covered on the website, about training, nutrition, weight loss, raising your children, increasing your sex drive, everything. Everything is there. Everything is waiting for you to visit it. Go to subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for. 4 and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altriantc.com. That's altriantc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altriantc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st Century Vitamin C.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. There's a new one. New mashup.
Yes, I thought I didn't recognize it, and I thought that's a new one.
Yeah. I'm still digging them up. I've got so many of them. I just need to get them loaded into the system. That's the problem. But there's just so much to do. Oh, my God. Just so much to do, really. And that's without the emergencies like, oh my God, we just lost our phone lines and internet. What do we do now? A half hour before the show, you know? It's like, what else? Anyway, okay, let's move on and talk about a couple really good subjects. First of all, let's talk about male hormone replacement therapy for a second.
Yeah, we've been talking so much about women and about the importance of estrogen, but testosterone is also very important. And a recent study showed that irrespective of your body composition and your metabolic state, low testosterone levels are always associated with an increase in heart disease risk. So treating them is actually an imperative. And scientists have now, for another time, actually established or confirmed that a viable alternative to classic testosterone gel or injections actually is the use of encomethane. And people will probably know the selective estrogen receptor modulator Clomid, which is a combination of encomethane and another selective estrogen receptor modulator, which is slightly more estrogenic. So you have to understand that both of these ingredients also have a very low activity on the estrogen receptor. They block the estrogen from docking to it, but they activate it at the same time. And in a way, this is actually not bad because you do not have no estrogen activity when you take products like this. And this could also explain why, in this particular study, the scientists found that the treatment with enclomiphene is actually preferable to regular testosterone gel, because the subject achieved the exact same amount of testosterone in their blood, while they also increased the fertility. And so this were the exact opposite effects of testosterone, of what long-term testosterone replacement often has. Because the enclomiphene would increase the luteinizing hormone and would thus increase the natural production of testosterone and also the natural production of sperm in the genitals of the man, and therefore it also increased the fertility. So this is really an option people should think about, and it's quite interesting that this has been around for years, and bodybuilders have used it for years. And only recently there have been published several studies suggesting that this may be, in fact, an alternative that should also be recognized by the medical orthodoxy as an alternative treatment strategy for male hypogonadism.
You know, it's been used for a long time, actually. There's quite a few studies back in the day about clomiphene citrate, which is just a portion of this, right?
Exactly. It's a mix. It's the mix of enclomiphene and another serum.
Right. And so I mean, it's well understood that this raises testosterone levels and has some benefits. But there are also some side effects from clomiphene. A lot of the men who use it complain about feeling melancholy and moody, and I think there's some other issues. I stand to be corrected, and maybe these were not well done studies because I don't remember them. They're pretty old. Linking clomiphene use to some sort of cancer. So I'm not. And again, I'm going from my memory, and my memory isn't always the best.
Yeah, I think that we don't really have enough long-term data, because most of the studies were actually done in women, obviously, because this type of medication was developed for women and for breast cancer treatment, and it could possibly be that it also precipitates cancer, and but I'm not quite sure. I would have to check that. Another thing you often hear is that it causes those floaters in the eye and degradation of sight, but as far as I know, there is no real.
No, I never know. I used clomiphene for quite some time when I suppressed my testosterone use years and years ago, and to try to revive it, and I did not notice any of those ocular issues that people talk about. But anyway, God, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
There are other drugs of which you find the same reports on those bulletin boards as well. Also for many of the
PDE5,
the androgens. Yeah, PDE5, and also many of the androgens are supposed to have this side effect. And maybe it's just the side effect of a side effect, like if, for example, a result of high blood pressure. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. Now let's talk about something that's even more interesting to me. And that is a human study on soy and post-workout hormone levels.
Yeah, that's an interesting study, because we actually have quite a high amount of studies comparing whey protein and soy protein, and in most cases the result was that soy is about equally effective in building muscle, at least over time. If you measure it directly post-workout, you usually have a slight advantage of whey protein because it has more leucine in it and therefore provides a greater increase in mTOR. But this here is the first study I have seen which investigated or which compared actually three supplements, whey protein isolate, soy protein isolate, and a maltodextrin placebo. So maltodextrin, just a carbohydrate, a sugar. And of all of these, the subjects consumed 20 grams. And the scientists did not measure the protein synthesis, but the endocrine response to the workouts. And what they found is pretty interesting, because the group which received the soy protein had 33% lower testosterone levels immediately after the workout. So the regular increase in testosterone after a workout about which I've written in the past several times, that we are not really sure how important it is for the growth response, but it is at least natural and should be there. It is blunted, and it's not just blunted compared to the whey protein group, but it's also blunted compared to the carbohydrate group. And in addition to that, the whey protein was also able to reduce the increase in cortisol after the workout. And if you compare the soy protein to the whey protein, you have a 40% higher cortisol spike after the workout in the subjects who consumed the soy protein. We've been talking about estrogen before, and that it's actually not as bad as you would think. Now you could say, well, maybe you get more estrogen, so right, you will burn more fat while you're working out. But there was, interestingly enough, no difference in estrogen, also no difference in SHGB, sexual binding globulin. So the carrier, so to say, for the hormones. And in the end, if you look at the at the composition of the proteins, the only difference that really could be responsible for that is the roughly 25 milligrams of isoflavones that are, which is really not a really high dosage, that are in, present in the soy protein. So the higher leucine content can hardly explain this difference, because otherwise we would see the low testosterone levels also in the carbohydrate group. And the carbohydrate group did not have the same low cortisol levels as the whey protein group, but they also didn't have the extreme spike that was observed in the soy group. Now, you could ask yourself, what's the importance of this study? What's the importance of this study when other studies have provided evidence that whey and soy are almost equally effective in building muscle? I can't tell you the answer, in as much as I can't tell you whether the immediate post-workout testosterone and cortisol response is really important. But I think it should really make you reconsider whether you want to use soy protein or not. If you don't have any issues with whey protein, it is at least, you will be hard pressed to find any argument to prefer soy over whey protein. And, I think price is not an issue either. So there really is, at least in my humble opinion, no argument to use a soy-based protein at all.
Okay. Last topic I want to cover, because we have to pull the plug on the show rather quickly thereafter. Is performance-enhancing drugs and supplements affect the psyche of the athlete? What did you find out?
Yeah, that's a slightly dubious study I hit upon, but I think it's still very interesting, because the scientists did evaluate how many people in commercial gyms actually use supplements and also performance-enhancing drugs, and then they questioned the individuals how often they would feel irritated, how often they would feel aggressive after the training, and how the exercise would affect their mood. And it's quite interesting to see that the people who did not consume any supplements, neither regular ones nor performance enhancing drugs, those were the people who got irritated much, who were not so irritated on a day-to-day basis, and they were also not that frustrated on a day-to-day basis. Now, the interesting thing about this particular study is that obviously the scientists say that the results suggest that through an unknown mechanism, PED, which is performance-enhancing drugs, usage has affected various psychological parameters of the users. Now, I say the parameters were thus before, because those people who are not satisfied with themselves, who are frustrated, who will get angry, are the ones who will first turn to the drugs, because they fall for the belief that this will make everything much easier. And this could be exactly the other way around, because up to now, most of the studies who tried to really prove that testosterone increases aggressiveness either had no results, and I remember having read only a couple of weeks ago a study which showed quite conclusively that men with high testosterone levels were less aggressive.
Right.
Than,
well, and we had a fantastic scientist on the show who did several good rat studies where they gave rats the equivalent of 1,000 milligrams in one single shot of fast-acting testosterone and then put them in positions to be provoked. And the rats did not act inappropriately.
They feel like him.
Yeah, in fact, the rats were provoked in a variety of situations, one of which I found very interesting. They took castrated rats and put them against the anabolic steroid class rats, and they provoked the anabolic steroid rat, and the anabolic steroid rat was able to still read social messages and knew that the castrated rat was of no threat and did not attack. However, when the rats were provoked legitimately and decided to attack, their attack was overwhelmingly stronger than a non-androgenized rat. But here's the message, folks. All it's saying is, look, androgens don't make you an idiot. You have to be an idiot first. Androgens don't make you aggressive, and androgens don't make you ignore the social messages out there. You're not going to start killing and attacking harmless children and women. But when a legitimate attack occurs to you, you will be able to respond with an exponentially greater force than had you not been on androgens. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think every soldier and every police officer should be on androgens.
I think that this is part of the way the public looks at this stuff. And in this particular study, it's also quite funny that guess which supplement or drug was the worst in terms of producing anger was creatine.
Really?
And we all know how creatine is always bashed and slammed into one category with not just testosterone, but things like trenbolone and the real hardcore doping stuff.
Right.
And the real scientists even say that it is a gateway drug to doping.
Should be
illegal. I've read that several times, the word gateway drug.
Wow, I didn't know that they were using it that way. So in other words, it's like marijuana was to recreational drugs, creatine is to performance enhancing drugs. That's laughable. That really is laughable. That's sad. Okay, so in summary, how do you summarize this research about performance enhancing drugs?
I would say that certain people have a higher tendency, or maybe a lower obstacle to try and start using performance enhancing drugs, and this is part of their general character. And they are easy to irritate, and they are getting frustrated easily. And they also think, or maybe I don't know if they even think about it, but they gravitate towards finding an easy solution, and they believe that using steroids would be that easy solution.
Right.
And therefore, doing a study like this by just questioning the people at the gym, whether they use or not, and how they feel after a workout, and how they feel in general. It does give you a correlation, but it does not say you who's the chicken and who's the egg, or what's the chicken and what's the egg.
Right.
And in my humble opinion, chicken and egg, it does not work here, but the causative factor is actually a certain personality trait that makes you could say, more susceptible, although this obviously has a very negative tone. I think that using creatine is something you shouldn't do, but some people will be more susceptible to trying everything that's available to them than others to increase their performance, and those are the ones who are usually getting irritated and frustrated faster anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're a jerk, you're going to be a jerk if you're drunk. A bigger jerk.
Yeah.
If you're a jerk, you're going to be a bigger jerk if you use anabolic steroids. If you're a jerk, you're going to be a bigger jerk if you're stuck in traffic. If you're a jerk, you're a jerk. Don't blame it on the circumstances. Blame it on the jerk. You know, it's time to stop blaming anabolic steroids for bad behavior. What about alcohol? Alcohol's caused more fights than anything in the world. What about that? Anyway, we could go on and on. Adele, thank you so much for all your hard work today.
It was a pleasure, and I hope people enjoyed the show. I think it was nice that we had a little more time and still went overboard, went over time, because those as you, what did you call them?
Off-topic.
You know, off-topic, off-topics were actually quite interesting also for me to hear your opinion.
Good, good. Well, that's good. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to visit Subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Talk to you later.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.